Good morning. I call the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee meeting to order for Tuesday, February 9th. There is a quorum present. Next, we'll move to approval of the February 7th, 2023 minutes. Representative Hansen, would you like to move those minutes?
I would move the minutes for February 7th, 2023.
Thank you. Representative Hansen moves approval of the minutes for February 7th, 2023. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for February 7th, 2023 are approved. Our first bill on the agenda this morning is that of Representative Abagé. If you would please come forward. Welcome, Representative Abagé, to the committee. Since you are not a member of this committee, I will move House File 366 be recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means. We have the bill before us. If you would like to identify yourself for the record and please present your bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Representative Esther Agbaje here to talk about House File 366, which is also known as the Reproductive Freedom Defense Act. What this bill does is it protects Minnesota healthcare providers, Minnesota citizens and residents and patients, even from those around the country who come here for reproductive health care. It protects them against legal attacks and criminal penalties that are being imposed by anti-abortion extremists in other states. This bill is necessary to protect the rights and access to reproductive health care for all Minnesotans, the health care providers who offer reproductive health care services, and those from other states seeking care. The overturning of Roe versus Wade has led to a flood of harmful laws attacking not only abortion rights, but also individual liberties and privacy more broadly. States like Texas, Georgia, Arkansas, Mississippi, Missouri, and Alabama have passed or introduced laws that criminalize abortion with penalties that can include fines, imprisonment, and/or revocation of medical licenses for the abortion provider. It is deeply troubling to see laws passed whose sole purpose is to punish people who perform reproductive health care. And so I'm glad to carry this bill where we can say that we are creating strong protections for Minnesota's own health care providers and citizens against legal attacks and criminal penalties imposed by anti-abortion extremists in other states. This legislation would prevent Minnesota's courts and institutions from being hijacked and abused in service of a harmful agenda from those outside of Minnesota. House File 366 ensures that the law governing the release of health records excludes out-of-state subpoenas and court orders for records when in relation to laws from other states that restrict or punish the provision, receipt, or attempted provision or receipt of reproductive health care services to a patient. This ensures that disclosure laws cannot be weaponized for other states' prosecution of health care that is protected under Minnesota law. This bill also protects physicians, physicians' assistants, and nurses from disciplinary action and/or not receiving a license solely because they may be coming from another state that has extreme anti-abortion laws targeting health care providers. Further, the bill protects Minnesotans from laws encouraging citizens to sue individuals for providing or helping someone obtain abortion care and allows anyone sued in another state under one of these laws to countersue in Minnesota to recover any costs affiliated with that care. It also ensures that Minnesota courts will not enforce out-of-state judgments for these types of lawsuits. For the sections pertinent to this committee, the bill states that in Minnesota, it will be against public policy to sue or prosecute someone who is seeking reproductive care, including abortion. With this bill, courts in Minnesota will not apply restrictive abortion laws from other states in our courts. The bill also states that Minnesota will not limit people's movements should they come to Minnesota seeking reproductive care from a more restrictive state, meaning that we will not extradite people or arrest people if the sole reason is that they either performed or sought what would be legal reproductive care in Minnesota. And with that, I'll turn to see if there are any testifiers available.
Thank you, Representative. Are there individuals wishing to testify? We have on the list Jess Braverman. Jess, if you'd please come forward and identify yourself for the record. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jess Braverman, and I'm the legal director at Gender Justice, a legal and policy advocacy nonprofit dedicated to advancing gender equity through the law. And I'm here today to support HF 366, the Reproductive Freedom Defense Act. We're deeply concerned about the impacts of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade and the attack on abortion rights, individual liberties, and privacy around the country. Many of these laws seek not only to ban abortion in their own states, but also to reach across state lines, preventing people from traveling elsewhere to get the care that they cannot get at home, and punishing those who provide abortion care and those who help people get that care. The goal of these laws is to scare providers and patients and ultimately stop all abortions wherever they occur. Our state has the responsibility to protect Minnesotans from the extreme abortion laws of other states and to protect all who travel here to seek care. The Reproductive Freedom Defense Act creates strong protections for Minnesota's own healthcare providers and others who help people get reproductive healthcare against attacks and criminal penalties imposed by other states' gross overreaches. It's the job of healthcare providers to care for their patients. They're not lawyers. They know and follow the law and regulations in our state, but can't be expected to understand the radical and extreme legislation in other states that are being passed there. They need to be able to provide care that is legal in our state to patients without fear of repercussions of other states' laws. To protect providers and others helping people receive abortion care, HF 366 ensures that having been disciplined or convicted in another state for providing reproductive health care that is lawful here in Minnesota is not a cause for discipline or for withholding of licensure by the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice. It protects Minnesotans from laws encouraging citizens to sue individuals for providing or helping someone obtain abortion care that is legal in Minnesota. It protects individuals from being delivered to another state under an extradition order for providing an abortion, and protects individuals from being arrested in Minnesota under out-of-state laws related to abortion care. The RFDA protects our rights, privacy, and dignity. There is strong support for these laws amongst Minnesota voters. In fact, three-quarters of Minnesota voters want to see abortion providers protected against legal action against them by other states that have banned abortion, and 74% support protections for people traveling from out of state to get abortion care in Minnesota. It is crucial to act now to protect patients and providers in Minnesota and those coming to Minnesota seeking care from the attacks enabled by the Supreme Court decision. So I urge you to pass HF 366. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have on the list Ray Parker. Ms. Ray Parker. Welcome, Ms. Parker, to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Good morning. My name is Ray Parker. I'm from Rochester, Minnesota. I'm here to voice my concerns about the bill HF 366. Yes, opposition. This bill seeks to overthrow the authority of other states over their citizens and allows violation of court orders, judge decrees, and more. It stands to violate fathers' rights by taking the life of his child. Not all men are predators, violent, or sadistic. Many only want to have the chance to raise their child. To ignore extradition requests from other states does not foster collegial reciprocity. But from other states, when we desire a criminal to come to justice here, we want that extradition to come back. So why are you trying to make Minnesota the most abhorrent state in the union? First, you subjugate God's law. Now you want to thwart the laws of other states. We don't want our laws broken. They don't want their laws broken. By your own description of this bill, you want to limit the release of health records, prohibit certain acts by health-related licensing boards, prevent certain judgments enforcement, restrict subpoena enforcement, prohibit extradition of persons charged in another state. Well, what about the father who's seeking to save the life of his child? In that instance where a late-term abortion is sought here after the court's deciding that father has his right to raise his child. So you have a vindictive person who wants to get even with that father and comes here, fleeing to avoid that court order and the judge's decrees. Now, you might think that wouldn't happen, but really there's much stranger cases that have happened. And do we really need to snuff out the life of all the unborn children, even from other states, who have already decided in court about a matter concerning their citizens? You're opening a Pandora's box of litigation. Vote no on this end run around criminal behavior, HF 366. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Barker. We appreciate your testimony. I'm not aware of any. Is there anyone else in the public who wishes to testify that hasn't been called forward? Thank you. If you'd please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Elena Niehoff. I'm a registered nurse from Rochester, Minnesota. I'm testifying against this bill, HF 366. Our country operates on the law, and the Constitution of the United States is a supreme law of the land. Supreme Court decision Marbury versus Madison stated that any law which supersedes the Constitution of the United States is null and void. So now about the Section 9 Minnesota Statute 2022-629.02. Duties of the governor in extradition matters gives exclusive protection, privileges, and immunities to the employee of any medical, surgical, counseling, or referral services relating to the human reproductive system, including but not limited to services related to pregnancy, contraception, or termination of pregnancy. In my opinion, this bill makes the employee of the above-mentioned industry literally untouchable. And Reproductive Service Corporation literally above the law. Do we want to have this corporation run the business on their terms or on the terms of we, the people? That's the question. Nobody should be above the law. I ask you to vote no on Bill HF 366.
Thank you, Ms. Niehoff, for your testimony. We appreciate your being here. Seeing no further testifiers from the public, we will move. I don't have any amendments for the bill. Is that correct? Okay. We will move to discussion by the members. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And question for the author.
Please proceed.
Representative Akbaje, partial birth abortion is federally illegal. And I'm just wondering if you could maybe help us understand how your bill is able to reconcile that, because I don't believe, much like preemption here in the state, we are not allowed to preempt federal law, if you could.
Representative Akbaje.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Nash. It is my understanding that partial birth abortions are not things that are happening. When people receive reproductive health care services, particularly abortions, those are oftentimes earlier, much, much earlier in the pregnancy. There are not cases where people are carrying a child full to term.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, with the passage of House File 1, it's now in law. There are restrictions that have been completely removed here in the state of Minnesota, and that was admitted on floor debate. So it is an established fact that that's what's going to happen or could happen. And I'm troubled by the fact that you're not addressing that in your bill and nor in your answer. So I'll just let that go, but Madam Chair, I would like a roll call on this bill.
A roll call has been requested. Representative Cosner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. Just kind of looking at this, and basically in this section of law, where it probably more for judicial committee, but If you could comment, what we're doing is accepting a lot of the current law, just carving this out for these particular instances in terms of extradition and such. Is there any discussion or concern that you have that other states may not participate in Minnesota's extradition laws? Say somebody was murdered or some other crime, escaped bail and had a warrant, and that they would not cooperate with Minnesota on other type of laws. Is there any concern about that?
Or Representative Abaje.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Koznick. I mean, already we're seeing from states that are passing unprecedented laws that are already trying to do overreach of their own restrictive laws, and trying to find ways to reach into other states to kind of control what their courts are doing and what their systems are doing. So what states who are, that is against their own public policy, is trying to find ways to protect their residents and their citizens from other states that may be trying to not comply with laws that are in, that are currently in other states that are different from theirs. So this is just a way to combat what we see in Minnesota as people being able to receive reproductive care, which is health care, against states that are saying that reproductive care does not qualify as health care.
Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair, I understand the intent.
Representative
of
Koznick, I'm just going to say your name so we're clear on the record who's speaking.
Yeah, thank
Representative
you.
Representative Koznick.
I understand basically what you're trying to do here, but I just think, and it's probably outside the purview of this committee, it's a concern that states generally work together pretty well to enforce public safety and to extradite criminals back and forth when needed, and I think this starts to open up a lot of debate on how states cooperate to enforce their public safety. Obviously a concern, but I think it'll be probably further vetted in the Judiciary Committee.
Thank you, Representative Koznick. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to say thank you, Representative Egbaje, for bringing this bill forward. I just want to comment quickly that in the case of murder is illegal everywhere. And so the chances that we would not comply with laws from other states, I think, would be a rare situation in which we wouldn't do that. Whereas with this situation with abortion, it is piecework that each state has different laws. And so we already know that conservative lawmakers in a handful of GOP states where abortion is banned have floated restrictive measures. And so there is a battle over states of what is going to happen. And I think it is really important that we see what is in front of us and we put laws into place. Representative Bajic, could you just maybe comment on how many other states have actually passed similar laws like the one that we're proposing today?
Thank you, Representative Abaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Herr. The states that, I'm just pulling up the list right now, it's about six other states around the country that have passed similar laws like this, California, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Delaware. So those are the states that have already begun their shield laws. And what we're doing is emulating many of what those protections that those states have put in. And I will also add to kind of what Representative Herr said, this is only for the area of lawful practice of reproductive health care. Any other laws, crimes, tort cases, those would still be adhered to in the ways that we currently do now. So this is not a way to protect anyone who's doing something wrong. But it is a conversation about where states are falling when there's a disagreement about certain types of, in this case, reproductive health care.
Thank you, Representative. I see no more questions. A roll call has been requested. Mr. O'Neill, if you, oh, I'm, okay, thank you. Mr. O'Neill, if you would please take the roll.
Chair Cleaver.
Aye.
Chair Cleaver, aye. Representative Hewitt, excused. Representative Nash?
No.
Representative Nash, no. Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Bonner, aye. Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Berg, aye. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Hansen, aye. Representative Harder?
No.
Representative Harder, no. Representative Herr?
Aye.
Representative Herr, aye. Representative Joy?
No.
Representative Joy, no. Representative Koznick?
No.
Representative Koznick, no. Representative Nadeau?
No.
Representative Nadeau, no. Representative Newton?
Aye.
Representative Newton, aye. Madam Chair, the ayes are 7 and the nays are 5, and one excuse.
With 7 ayes, 5 nays, and one excuse, the ayes have it. House File 366 is recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative, for being with us today in committee. The next bill we have before us is House File 2. Representative Richardson, welcome.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nash.
I'm looking through my packet, and maybe it's just an oversight, but I don't have a fiscal note in the packet for House File 2.
Do we have a fiscal note? Ms. Roberts, if you'd please address the question of Representative Nash.
Madam Chair. Representative Nash, we do not have a completed fiscal note. One has been requested. It's in process.
And Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, this is this is now the fifth committee stop for this bill?
Yes.
With no fiscal note?
Mm-hmm.
And the purview of this bill for our committee is hard costs around state government, and we don't know what that's going to be. And I would commend Madam Chair for a conversation we had earlier in the week where we agreed that if we didn't have a fiscal note, we'd be holding a bill in committee. And Madam Chair, we don't have...
Representative Nash, that was not an agreement I made. I said I was not bringing my own bill.
Oh, well, Madam Chair, we're being asked to vote on something that's going to cost millions of dollars based on a previous fiscal note, and you don't have that. We don't have any way to make an informed decision about this. There's no way that you can actually make an informed vote. Mm-hmm. Representative Bonner and I are IT professionals. There's no way we can make an informed vote on the IT requests that are in this bill. This is just kabuki theater if it's not actually going to be looked at with a fiscal note. We'd have no way of making an informed decision.
Mr. Gehring, would you please... do you have available to you the sections that are applicable to this committee? Am I putting you on the spot? Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Gehring.
Well, with that, Madam Chair, I'm going to make a motion to table and request a roll call. We don't have the information. How can we make an informed vote?
Representative Nash, I hear your motion, and we will have that, we will have a vote on that motion. What I will say to you is that every bill that comes before this committee moves at the discretion of the chair. It is my opinion when I scheduled this bill that we would hear the bill. We know this is not the last stop for this bill. Is that correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
We also know that with 1,500 bills already being introduced this year, by both Republicans and Democrats, that we have overwhelmed our revisor's office and we have overwhelmed our fiscal notes. So I will ask the clerk.
Madam Chair,
you've got
the penalties defined in here. Those are clear, penalties for noncompliance with this potential law, but you don't have the costs.
Representative,
I look forward to our vote.
We're going to call a vote on the motion to table the bill. Will the clerk please take, not the clerk, Mr. O'Neill, will you please take the roll?
Representative Cleburne.
No.
Representative Cleburne, no. Representative Hewitt, excused. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Nash, aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg.
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Freiberg, no. Representative Hansen.
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder. Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr.
No.
Representative Herr, no. Representative Joy.
Aye.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Koznick.
Aye.
Representative Koznick, aye. Representative Nadeau.
Aye.
Representative Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton.
No.
Representative Newton, no. Madam Chair, the ayes are 5, the nays are 7, and there is one excused.
With 5 ayes, 7 nays, the motion does not prevail, and the bill is moving. We are continuing to discuss the bill. Representative Richardson, to your bill, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2 creates a statewide family and medical leave.
Excuse me, Representative Richardson, I forgot to move the bill in all of that discussion. So I make a motion to recommend House File 2 to be re-referred to Human Services Finance Committee. Please, with the bill before us, present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2 creates a statewide family and medical leave benefit program, and it would provide a much needed safety net for families who need to take time away from work to care for a new child or care for a sick family member or to recover themselves. Working people's need for family and medical leave is universal. Unfortunately, in Minnesota, only an estimated 13% of workers have access to paid family leave through their employer to care for a new child or a seriously ill family member. And less than half of Minnesotans have access to personal medical leave. All workers experience illness or a family member's illness at some point in their lives. Access to paid leave should not be dictated by your gender, the color of your skin, your zip code, whether you work for a large or small employer, nor should it be denied on your job title. We need to abandon the harmful narrative that only some people are worthy or deserve to have their humanity recognized when facing a serious health condition or welcoming a new child. As the committee's jurisdiction is limited, I'll keep my comments limited to the jurisdictional elements before us, and we'll also do a brief walkthrough of the bill. I want to ensure members know that the structure of this bill relies heavily on processes that are familiar to agencies and Minnesotans that interact with the unemployment insurance program. In fact, many of the elements have been modeled after DEET's UI structure. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn it over to the author testifier to do a brief walkthrough.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzpatrick. Welcome to the committee, and if you would please identify yourself. I don't know if I should refer to you as Dr. Fitzpatrick.
Sorry, thank you, Chair Cleborn. My name is Deborah Fitzpatrick, and I am the Director of Policy and Research at Children's Defense Fund, Minnesota. In my prior role at the University of Minnesota, I led the research team that conducted Minnesota's legislatively mandated design and implementation study under contract with DEED. I'll spend just a few minutes grounding the committee in the program structure. So House File 2 sets up a statewide, publicly administered insurance program that is self-funded and sustainable over the long term through contributions from workers and employers, including those in the public sector. It allows self-employed people and business owners to join the program and employers to provide a comparable program. Eligibility is based on workforce participation, and healthcare providers in most cases certify the need and the length of leaves. Much of the program, as Representative Richardson mentioned, is designed to build on Minnesota's successful UI processes, as well as those in 8 other states with implemented programs. Among design options, this one was chosen for a variety of reasons. I'll lift up just 3. First, it is a portable wage replacement benefit, especially important. All right, sorry. All right, thank you. You can see it better now. Okay. So as I was saying, the first one is that it is a portable wage replacement benefit that's especially important for workers with multiple employers or those changing jobs. Second, it creates the broadest possible risk pool, a feature necessary for keeping the costs low and leveling the playing field among employers. And finally, it is the proven, effective, sustainable model that gives all workers an opportunity to earn and count on the benefit from year to year. And it makes costs currently borne by both employers and workers more predictable. House File 2 does not create the need for leave. Employers, including those in the public sector, are already dealing with significant costs associated with leaves. House File 2 just makes those costs both more visible and easier to build into both employer and family budgets. So while the bill provides up to 12 weeks of medical leave and up to 12 weeks for family leave, again, for serious life events lasting more than 7 days, experience shows that workers take what they need, and that is on average less than the maximum allowed. For example, Massachusetts allows up to 26 weeks, and median leave lengths have been 12. In Washington, the entitlement is 12 to 18 weeks, and the average has been around 7. There is no evidence that Minnesota workers are less committed to their employers or coworkers or more inclined to abuse their benefits than those in other states. In fact, one could argue the opposite. The design of House File 2 sits squarely within the parameters of other state programs, with not a single major policy element that isn't matched or exceeded by other states. For example, since we have been talking about leave lengths, as shown here, there are 5 other states that have combined leave entitlements that exceed those included in House File 2. Finally, I just wanted to spend a few minutes clearing up what seems to be a lot of confusion about current access to various kinds of support for workers when the need for leave arises. First of all, this program and those typically referred to as paid family and medical leave are designed to provide wage replacement during more serious life events that require a longer period away from work. Than typical employer-provided sick and vacation time, which should be used for other family needs. So a variety of sources, including the National Compensation Survey, find that only around a quarter of all workers have access to paid family leave from their employer. That drops to 13%, as Representative Richardson mentioned, for the lowest earning quartile of workers. Of relevance to this committee, a similar percentage of public sector workers have access. Slightly more workers, although still a minority, around 40%, have access to a temporary disability or medical leave benefit, falling to 22% for those lower wage workers, and around 27% for public sector workers. You may hear the statistic that 80% of employers are already addressing this need. True that many employers do provide paid PTO or paid time off, but the average annual PTO accrual is only 17 days per year, and most employers limit or allow no carryover from year to year. Again, the program outlined in House File 2 addresses the more significant need not met by these employer-provided policies. Finally, calls to align eligibility for this program more closely with FMLA leave out almost half of Minnesota workers. So with that, I will be available for questions later.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzpatrick. Representative Richardson, is there more you want to say about the bill at this time?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, we have, I'm going to leave the choice to you. We have several people who are here to testify for the bill, and we have 3 amendments. Would you prefer to go to testimony first? I'd like to make sure we hear public voice in this committee, or would you prefer to do the amendments first?
Madam Chair, I'll defer to you. I'm ready to adjust with whatever you decide.
Right. Lead Nash, do you have a preference?
Well, Madam Chair, on the outside chance that the amendments are accepted, then we might want to pick up the amendments first.
Okay, let's, some of these amendments have already been heard in other committees, so who is offering the A-15?
That would be me.
All right, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the A-15 and request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this pushes the effective date out to 2026. We have heard that we don't have a fiscal note. We don't have an understanding of the costs associated with this. We don't know the IT costs, which is in the jurisdiction of this committee. We have no idea. We are literally flying blind. And I think that in order for us to appropriately deal with the effective date so that this may or may not become the next Menlars, we should take a deliberative act to say we're going to slow down, we're going to take a breath, and we're going to make sure that we allow for this to be built out properly, because I have grave concerns, and I believe anybody who has experienced or lived through Menlars, Minsure, and any other software deployment should recognize that this is a completely bespoke process. And the previous fiscal note talks about just that. The previous fiscal note talks about almost 300 people being required to build this, but now we don't know what that cost is. We have no idea. So with that, I think that it is prudent, if we are going to pass this into law, that it should be moved out until at least 2026. Because if you do this and it falls on its head, which I believe it will, then it is something that you had the opportunity to avoid, prevent, and be deliberative in not allowing it to come to fruition. So, again, trying to help you out here, Representative Richardson, this is, as we've heard, I think this is now the fifth stop, no fiscal note, no understanding of the costs, no understanding of the processes, nothing. So with that, I would renew my motion and the roll call.
Representative Richardson, would you like to address the question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Nash, for bringing forward the amendment as well. I would say that Minnesotans have been waiting a really long time for this benefit. This bill has been around before I joined this body. I think it's going on 8 years now that this bill has been being discussed within committees and within the House floor. And I, you know, and my position is to do the work to get this done as soon as possible, because we know Minnesotans are hurting and families don't have access to this this leave that they need. I would also note that in the work with DEED, because a lot of this work is based on what already is done within the UI system. I would just note that the infrastructure that was built out for the pandemic unemployment assistance program, Minnesota was the first in the nation to complete that, and I think that speaks to the workers at DEED in terms of their ability to not only stand up a new infrastructure, but to also lead the nation in terms of doing that to ensure that we could get critical assistance to a record number of Minnesotans, over 500,000 quickly. So I would recommend a no vote on this. I do understand that there's differences of opinion about when this should begin, and I think those conversations will continue as the bill moves.
Right. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Richardson, for that actually very thorough account. I did want to just say that, you know, when we heard this bill in a previous cycle, I think there was a lot of concern about how we were going to stand it up. Let's be honest, from a technical standpoint. Since that time, there has been a lot of conversation and a lot of discussion about how we could do that technologically. And we do have a plan to do that. We are not necessarily creating a bespoke, although I love that word, thank you, Representative Nash, but solution. So, you know, I think we have to understand that this is, we do have potentially a model to do this. And certainly I know I assume that Representative Nash will also be watching the technological parts of this bill very, very closely and would certainly love to get more information on that portion of the bill when it's available. I would actually encourage the author to bring some of those to our IT caucus members to make sure that we have a good, solid plan in place. But I do think for today that we can proceed as necessary.
Thank you, Representative Kuznick. You had a brief question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's been talk in other committees as this bill has moved on that some of the ideas and amendments would be better vetted out and thought through, but I'm not sure that we see that today. We're on the fourth engrossment and to the first motion to table this and hear this until we get a fiscal note. I think was short-sighted that that was voted down, and just the common sense approach to creating good public policy. So it's unfortunate that we aren't taking the pause here, but we've waited for 8 years, and we can't. Maybe the author can share with the committee if we have an estimated cost of what this is. I talked to Dakota County, one of the counties that I represent. It's over $500 million that they estimate that it will cost them as a large employer, the state being even a larger employer. Would the author know, have an idea of how much it will cost the state of Minnesota for its employees that is within the purview of this committee? You know, and we talked that, you know, a potential model for setting up this system just doesn't cut it. If we've had 8 years to work on this, and I don't know what the rush is to not have that figured out adequately. You mentioned the state of Washington and their system, and I don't think that was rolled out very successfully at all. It was rather a disaster. And so I wonder if the author, if you know what the cost to the state of Minnesota as an employer, what that will be.
Thank you. I would just like to preface this. In the bill, we usually say that we want to stick to the areas of jurisdiction in this committee. In reading the bill, there are no obvious policy sections that pertain to this committee. The bill is passing through us because there are general costs across many agencies. But I would just ask you to answer briefly, please, and we'll go to the roll call.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kosnick, for the question. I would encourage members to look at the fiscal note for House File 1200 if they are looking for some of the estimated costs that have moved through committee previously. And, you know, and I would note that in terms of the, you know, looking at building this program, with the model that we're using based on UI, we have the opportunity to be able to learn from other implementations and other other infrastructure that has been stood up. And to the question about why the rush is because Minnesotans deserve access to paid family and medical leave. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. Representative Harder, did you have a question on this particular amendment?
Maybe a comment, can I?
Briefly, please, yeah. We'd like to.
Okay, well, we're talking about costs, so thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Richardson. So with local government, I did check into some of the counties that I serve as to the cost of what this might be to the taxpayers of counties. And so it's estimated on this particular bill that a county or a local unit of government, that the cost could be anywhere between a quarter to 1% increase in the levy. And so when I look at bills, I tend to go to the higher side, say the 1%, because there's always the unintended consequences of a lot of these mandates. So we had the reporting requirements. If people are going to be gone, then we have to backfill by overtime, whatever the case might be. So in my checking with that, if the bill was passed, so like the county that I live in, Sibley County, so if it's the 1% be taking these other costs, that county is going to have to pay an additional $162,000 to implement this. Carver County, if you have to use the 1%, it's estimated that it could be up to $656,000 for the people of that county to cover this cost. And then if you're in Hennepin County, I was just made aware that perhaps it could cost anywhere between $4 to $5 million for the people of that county to cover this particular cost. So I just wanted to shed light that I have looked at some numbers as to what it might cost local units of government.
Thank you very much, Representative Harder. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Harder, for bringing that information forward. I think it's also important when we're analyzing the numbers that we also analyze the cost of not doing this program as well. because what we know in terms of states with paid family medical leave programs, reliance on social programs reduce as a result of that. Keeping people in the workforce increases, particularly around the rates of women within the workforce, because there are definite costs to people leaving the workforce when they don't have access to paid family leave, and that's the system that we have right now. And understanding when someone is facing a serious health condition, they're going to be out. So the understanding around replacement costs, this program actually provides an opportunity for them to get a prorated benefit while a county or a city would have to backfill in the sense of someone being out. In addition to that, there are several cost savings around not only infant health, maternal health, but also long-term care costs. And I think all of those should be taken into consideration when we're thinking about the cost of the program. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. Mr. O'Neill, if you would please take the roll.
Chair Cleaborn?
No.
Chair Cleaborn, no. Representative Hewitt, excused. Representative Nash?
Aye.
Representative Nash, aye. Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg?
No.
Representative Freiberg, no. Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder?
Aye.
Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr?
No.
Representative Herr, no. Representative Joy?
Aye.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau?
Aye.
Representative Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton?
No.
Representative Newton, no. Madam Chair, the ayes are 5. The nays are 7. The excused is 1.
With 5 ayes, 7 nays, 1 excused, the A-15 amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A-20. Who is bringing this amendment forward?
A-20?
Yes.
That's mine, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau, to your amendment, please.
I would move my amendment, and it's a simple amendment, and based on the discussion that we've had today, hopefully it will, you'll look on it favorably. You know, you mentioned in your testimony, what this bill does is it just basically says that we hire an actuary, and, you know, we don't proceed until we actually understand the costs. And you mentioned earlier that you want to do the work to get this done. And we want to know the cost of doing it and not doing it, and you want to take all those things into account. And that's what I want. I want too. I mean, I haven't decided whether or not this bill is good or bad. There's a lot of benefits to providing for people. I would submit that you know when we're talking about lower income people with lower wage jobs. Moving them ahead is the greatest thing for them is not putting them on a percentage of their salary, you know, so that's not going to be a great benefit. It's going to help. But every state that's implemented this, and I think it's been 11, have done an actuarial study done. And they either did it beforehand or they did it after. The ones that did it after, it cost a lot more. And I look at Washington, it was $350 million. You know, without having accurate data on what it costs to do it, what the cost of not doing it, without having that information, it's really difficult to make that decision. Now, I just learned today that this bill has been going around for 8 years. I don't know that. So you guys have obviously heard this a lot more than I have. If in 8 years we haven't been able to come up with a cost and an implementation that people can look at and say, you know what, I may not agree or disagree, but to where we are today, this is House File 2, and there's not a fiscal note, and the old one said it was, you know, 1.7 to 1.8 billion, and not have an actuary that can actually look at this and say, you know what, all the other states, many other states have done 12 weeks, some have done 6, some have done 26, you know, it just seems kind of arbitrary. So I would move this amendment and hope. I guess I'm assuming that it's probably been offered before, and that I don't know, but I would hope that you, Representative Richardson, would look at this and say, you know what, this is important. We do want to understand the cost of what this is going to be, and the cost if we don't do it, And I would hope that you would accept that amendment. I would ask for a roll call vote, Madam Chair.
Thank you. A roll call has been requested. And Representative Nadeau, just for your information, since you didn't know about this amendment, it was offered in workforce and it was offered in labor previously, and it's been voted down twice. Just so you have that information. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Nadeau, for the amendments and the comments as well. I'll just clarify one thing, the $1.7 billion that was mentioned, that was actually funding from the surplus to shore up the program, which is also within this bill as well. And for that reason, knowing that we would be shoring up this program with $1.7 billion, what I wouldn't want to do is delay access to Minnesotans who are in need of paid family and medical leave. I am completely open to an actuarial study as long as it doesn't delay the implementation of the program. I would also note, because the some of the other states that have been mentioned, when they implemented their programs, they started with a really low rate, as low as I think 0.4. And now, because Washington, I think, was mentioned, and they started with 0.4, and I think they're just around 0.7 or so now that they have moved their collection rate to. So I would just say that I'm fine with an actuarial study as long as it doesn't delay the program. And this amendment in this current form, I would ask for a no vote on.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I had a question of clarification.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the author, you used the term shore up, $1.7 billion of taxpayer money to shore up. I'm not sure that it's clear what you mean by shore up. The previous testifier said that this is a self-funded program, and I'm not sure that that's exactly clear or true. If the author could clarify what she means by $1.7 billion to shore up.
Thank you, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Kosnick. By the $1.7 billion, I'm talking about the appropriation that is written into House File Number 2 that would ensure that the taxpayer dollars that have been collected wouldn't be delayed to going to families who are in need of paid family medical leave.
Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair, if I could...
Mr. Kosnick, Representative Kosnick.
Yeah. Thank you. So if I could just... It wasn't exactly clear. 1.7, if I understand what I think the author is saying, is we're going to take $1.7 billion of taxpayers' surplus over collection to put into the pool to get this started. Is that right?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Representative, or thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kosnick, for the question. Yes, we are looking at with the way the bill is drafted. It would have an initial investment from the current surplus of $1.7 billion.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I would just say it's not a self-funded through the premiums. The premiums are actually would be much higher if we weren't doing that, which is a problem. And maybe if we had a fiscal note, we'd have a better discussion on that. Thank you.
Representative Nadeau, you would like to?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that, Representative Richardson. I don't want to delay your program. Is there a particular date? I mean, I didn't think that I was changing the date or trying to slow it down. I would love for you to, take this amendment so that it's in here so that I can feel comfortable. But if you're not opposed to it, is there a way that I can orally amend it to adopt it today or not really?
We would not take an oral amendment of this size, but I appreciate that. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and yes, happy to work with you on that. I think it's the language around 1.11 around the commencements of the program, but happy to continue that conversation with
thank
you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And there would still be opportunity to amend the bill as it continues to move.
Correct. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And with that, Mr. O'Neill, if you would please take the roll.
Chair Cleavorn.
No.
Chair Cleavorn, no. Representative Hewitt, excused. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Nash, aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg.
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Freiberg, no. Representative Hansen.
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder.
Aye.
Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr.
No.
Representative Herr, no. Representative Joy.
Aye.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Representative Koznick, aye. Representative Nadeau,
aye.
Representative Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton,
no.
Representative Newton, no. Madam Chair, the ayes are 5, the nays are 7, excused is 1.
Thank you. With a vote of 5 ayes, 7 nays, 1 excused, the A20 is not, the motion does not prevail. The A20 is not adopted. Next, we have the A28 amendment. And who is bringing the A28 forward?
Madam Chair, I move the A28 and request a roll call.
Thank you, Representative Nash, to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this the A28 would require the OLA to do a report to look at the viability of this program, were it to become law, and submit that to the chairs and ranking members of legislative committees of jurisdiction. And here's why. So we have had fantastic OLA reports on many things. We've had MNLARS, we've had MNsure, we've had a number of other things, and I'm trying to keep it in the jurisdiction of this committee. This is going to be, as the author points out, a very expensive bill. There are lots of moving parts that are not necessarily well defined at this point. And we know that it's not well defined because we don't have the fiscal note that can articulate all the pieces and components of how this is working. So we've tried to delay the enactment date to say, hey, let's slow down. We've tried to do an actuarial assessment, and that's been voted down. This is going to be, if not the, but perhaps one of the most wide-sweeping pieces of legislation, and I believe the author said that in her introduction. The potential deleterious effects of this are profound. We have been moving at a breakneck speed, so much so that we've outkicked the coverage of the fiscal note. I think that much like the Southwest Light Rail OLA report that we have directed, that this is something that we should do, that it is prudent. The OLA is a very fair umpire, calls balls and strikes unbelievably fairly, and if this is such a fantastic program, then the OLA report will come back and say, good job. But I think that for the comfort of all involved, including people who are around the state and businesses and so on, that having a report that would allow us to continue to make informed decisions is wholly appropriate, and I request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. Representative Hansen, I think, asked to speak to this first, if that's all right with you, Representative Richardson. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I would ask you to oppose the A28 amendment. The A28 amendment is similar to things we've seen in previous years where you're bypassing the Legislative Audit Commission. And the Legislative Audit Commission has a strong record of working with the legislative auditor. It is bipartisan and bicameral. It has not organized yet for this year. It will be organizing next Monday. You know, there was a trend several years ago of writing in audits, and when you write in the audits, you also are writing in cost. I think we need to trust the Audit Commission for this. The Southwest Light Rail was referenced. That was actually picked by the Audit Commission. There was an effort of holding back and working with the Audit Commission to make sure that it was clear which subjects were covered and that the Audit Commission was having its authority still there. We either trust the Audit Commission or we don't. It's worked well for Minnesota. Writing this in also at the early stage, we don't manage by audit. We allow management, and the audit usually is picked after a program is established, not when it started.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Newton, did you want to?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Nash, so many of the sections of this bill are not effective until 1 July of 2025. And in addition to what Representative Hansen said, that's a very short period of time because you will not have had even 1 year, one full year to audit. So I would recommend that we vote against this amendment.
Representative Richardson, is there any more you'd like to add?
No, Madam Chair.
A roll call has been requested. Mr. O'Neill, if you would please take the roll.
Chair Cleavorn.
No.
Chair Cleavorn, no. Representative Hewitt, excused. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Nash, aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg.
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Freiberg, no. Representative Hansen.
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder?
Aye.
Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr?
No.
Representative Herr, no. Representative Joy?
Aye.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Koznick?
Aye.
Representative Koznick, aye. Representative Nadeau?
Aye.
Representative Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton?
No.
Representative Newton, no. Madam Chair, the ayes are 5, the nays are 7, excused is 1.
With 5 ayes, 7 nays, 1 excused, the motion does not prevail. The A28 is not adopted. Representative Richardson, we have several people here who wish to testify. Would you like for us to move now to testimony?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you.
We have first, I'm going to give a list of names. So I will say who's testifying, and then the next two on deck, if that's all right. So if you'd move forward. Dr. Wilburn, you are our first testimony today, followed by Uriah Ward and Mitra Jalali. So Dr. Wilburn, if you'll please come forward first. Please state your, welcome to the committee, state your name for the record, and please begin your testimony. And if I could ask, if we keep our testimony at about 90 seconds, we'll try to give you a little leeway if
I'll
we
do
can.
My best. Do my best.
The amendments took a little longer than I anticipated.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Dr. Kimberly Wilburn, and I am an at-large city council member representing the, residents across the city of Minnetonka. I'm also many other things, including a community member, a wife, and not least of all, a mother. As I consider this bill, I can't help but think of the births of my own children. They were both delivered via C-section at 31 weeks because of my severe preeclampsia. I was hospitalized with life-threatening complications post-delivery. My babies were in neonatal intensive care, and my husband was trying to juggle between being present for me and our newborn, working, and after the birth of our second child, caring for a 3-year-old. And yet, as harrowing as that time was, we were lucky. What would have happened if my critical health issues had not been resolved? What if my children had had major complications associated with their early delivery? What if I had been a single mother without a support group? Would I have had to check myself out of the hospital and go back to work against the advice of physicians when my vision was so clouded due to swelling around my eyes that I couldn't see well enough to drive? No one should have to choose between their own health and keeping a roof over their head, between caring for an ailing elderly parent or putting food on the table, between being with their new baby or keeping the heat and lights on, and yet currently there are Minnesotans making these decisions. My city, like many other cities, has vacant positions and quite a few employees scheduled to retire in the next few years. There are concerns about filling positions and the loss of institutional memory should we be unable to add and replace employees. Being able to offer paid family and medical leave will be an important factor in recruiting and retaining employees. I urge you to support this bill so that all of us can take care of ourselves and each other. Thank you.
Dr. Wilburn, thank you for being with the committee today. Uriah Ward. And next on deck, we will have Mitra Jalali. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Uriah Ward. I have the honor of serving on the St. Paul Public Schools Board of Education. But more importantly, I am the husband of a wonderful teacher who works for Intermediate School District 917. And we are expecting our first child at the end of April. As a soon-to-be parent, I am thrilled about paid family medical leave. Every parent deserves the opportunity to be with their child for those critical early moments, and it's shameful when only those with economic means are able to stay with their newborns. I've heard the argument that educators don't need PFML because they can have children in the summer. I hesitate to share this much about this part of my personal life, but we tried. We timed it out to give ourselves the best possible chance of having our child during the summer, but it didn't quite work out that way. This is my wife's 4th year teaching in Minnesota, but only her first with 917. She gets no paid parental leave, none. And since she has to take unpaid leave, we're losing the employer contribution for our insurance during that time. Our family is losing about a month and a half of wages, and insurance is going up by over $2,000 because we're having a child. My wife is one of the most wonderful and hardest working people I know, but having a child shouldn't have to be this hard. Our educators are the people that we trust most to care for our children, but we don't give them the time they need to be with their own children when they're born. I've also heard the argument that we need highly qualified educators to be in classrooms with our students, and that this bill would mean that our educators spend more time away from our students. I certainly agree that having highly qualified educators working with our kids is critical for their success. Right now, we are struggling to recruit and retain these highly qualified workers. It's important for us to realize that we are not going to bring more people to the profession without improving the working conditions of our educators. PFML would make it easier for great teachers to stay teachers. Paid family medical leave is the right thing to do for my family and for the families I serve in St. Paul Public Schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. And the next testifier will be Jen. Oh, I'm sorry. Please, no, you are next. Okay. Please, thank you. And on deck, we will have Jen Westmoreland.
Thank
if you'd
you.
Please state your name for the record, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Mitra Jalali. Thank you. Honorable members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Mitra Jalali. I'm the co-chair of Local Progress Minnesota, a statewide network of progressive local elected officials who signed a letter in strong support of this legislation. I'm also here today in my capacity as one of seven St. Paul City Council members who represent over 300,000 residents of our capital city. As local leaders, we are closest to the communities we serve, and one thing we hear loud and clear for our constituents is the critical need of a statewide paid family and medical leave program. As you've heard, the vast majority of Minnesotans don't have access to paid family medical leave, and this burden falls the heaviest on low-wage workers, people of color, and women. The current system is not only unfair, but it's also actually very costly to workers, families, small businesses, and our economy. A paid family medical leave program would address the caregiving crisis, and it would ensure that nobody has to make impossible choices to take care of their own families. This legislation would be literally life-changing for Minnesotans, and I urge you to seize this historic opportunity to make it happen. I'm also here as a councilwoman in support of our thousands of city employees, public sector workers that have taken on extraordinary, and I do mean extraordinary, frontline work in caring for our residents in what's now a three-year pandemic. Our city workers keep libraries open, they care for children at rec centers, they patch potholes, they take out the trash and recycling, they keep the water that comes out of your tap clean and safe to drink, and so much more. And these jobs have not stopped being essential during a global pandemic that has claimed over a million American lives and exposed the deep disparities in our society. Our city workers have borne more exposure to the virus, more hours and tasks taken on in hazardous conditions, and more personal sickness because of the nature of their work serving the public, and many have exhausted or have had to have vacation and personal time donated just to keep serving our community. The city of St. Paul is made only stronger and more able to meet our residents' needs, as well as the thousands of people who visit our capital city to do business here, if our employees have this additional support.
Thank you, Ms. Jalali.
Thank you.
We appreciate your testimony. We have Jen Westmoreland, and then we'll move to Corey Anderson, Alex Hassel, and Steve Kalina.
Good morning. I'm Jen Westmoreland, she, her pronouns, and I serve as chair of the Hopkins School Board. I'm testifying in my capacity as an individual elected official in support of House File 2, including full benefits for public school employees. You have heard from educational leaders who are concerned about the cost a PFML program would add to already underfunded public school budgets. This is a reality. And creating exceptions in this bill that would reduce benefits for or exclude public school employees is not the answer. We are a state with abundant resources, and we must adopt a yes and approach to fully fund our public schools and our public school employees. The best option would be for the state to fund school districts' portion of PFML costs in order to keep our general funds whole and provide paid family and medical leave benefits to all public school employees. A PFML program will help school districts recruit and retain excellent public school employees who reflect the diversity of our communities. This is a commitment that we have made to our Hopkins schools community. Reduced or no PFML for public school employees would pose significant concerns for recruitment and retention, especially amongst communities that have been systemically excluded from our teaching force. As a queer woman, mother, and public educator, I appreciate the inclusive definition of family as written in this bill. After this bill is passed, it's important that school district and union leaders be at the table to work on both state agency and district level implementation. There will be challenges to address, but we will be able to overcome them if we both fully fund our public schools and protect our valued staff with paid family and medical leave.
Thank you.
We can and must do both.
Thank you. Ms. Westmoreland. Next, we have Corey Anderson, followed by Alex Hassel, followed by Steve Kalina. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Anderson. If you would please begin your state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Corey Anderson, and I'm here representing NAFA, National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, along with MAHU, Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters, two organizations with many members in each legislative district and more than 1,000 statewide. I'm the owner and founder of DI Geek Insurance Agency, specializing in disability insurance, and I've been in the business over 20 years, and I have 4 employees. Through the years, we have worked with over 1,200 clients protecting the income of business owners and their employees, both hourly and salaried. I, along with the members of MAHU and NAFA, are opposed to House File 2 in its current form. Legislators need to understand that medical leave in this bill is the same as their short-term disability coverage. As a specialist in this area, I can tell you that the private sector has affordable short-term disability products available with very broad coverage for just about every group and individual. With many providers offering coverage for disability income, the market is competitive, so the prices are very affordable. Most employers already offer either subsidized short-term disability coverage to their employees or voluntary unsubsidized coverage, where the employee has the option to purchase group coverage. To the extent that the employee has not opted for coverage, they are making a value decision on what works best for their personal needs. Since the advocate of this bill claims to have run into problems finding coverage, they may need to have another agent that has more expertise in these lines of business. The perception of a scarcity is not an accurate representation of our marketplace. What this bill does is put state government in direct competition with private sector. The bill is virtual market takeover by a state agency with no experience delivering this service or accurately pricing such a product.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. If you'll just...
Thank you.
We appreciate your testimony. Alex Hassel. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thanks, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Alex Hassel. I'm here on behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities. I'm also here on behalf of my colleague, Matt Hilgart, from the Association of Minnesota Counties. He can't be here today, so combining some testimony for cities and counties. As public employers, we recognize that our number one asset is our workforce. Together, we employ tens of thousands of employees across the state who work to deliver essential public services to their communities. We understand the importance of supporting that workforce, and through a long history of collective bargaining, cities and counties provide public sector employees generous benefits unique to their various bargaining groups, with many of these CBAs providing significant plans surrounding paid time off, sick leave, short-term disability, and more. I mention these benefits because in many cases they aim to provide a very similar benefit as this bill, but due to the rigidity of the program would not meet the requirements set forth of the bill. Many cities and counties offer accrued leave of over 1,000 hours to be used for an employee's need. For context, 1,000 hours is 25 weeks of leave. These leave banks provide full salary replacement and in some cases can be paid out upon retirement. We would like to see this bill authorize an employer to require the use of some of this time as it was intended to be used. Under the current proposal, an employee could utilize up to 24 weeks of leave and still have access to their entire leave bank. Not only is this a large financial liability for public employers to continue to carry, but it isn't using accrued leave for its intended purpose. Additionally, we would like to see the bill specify that future premium adjustments be noticed to employers before preliminary levies are set. It's imperative that any increased costs from this program be communicated before levies are set so that local governments can account for increased costs and that this does not result in service reductions or impacts to operations. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Steve Kalina, followed by Ann Thayer, and then Lee Sullivan. Steve Kalina? I do not see him, Steve Kalina, so if we'll go to Ann Thayer. welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and please begin your testimony. And again, I apologize, it's about 90 seconds.
Right.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ann Thayer, and I am a reference associate at the Minnesota Historical Society. I'm also the primary caregiver for my mother, who's 95 years old. I'm here today to express my support and the support of AFSCME Council 5 for House File 2. The partial wage replacement and workplace protections in this bill would be vital for me to continue caring for my mother from home. I've been caring for my mother for over 4 years. During the pandemic, when we were able to work a hybrid schedule, it was possible for me to both care for my mother in her day-to-day activities and do my job. But my employer has recently brought us back to work in person only, so my ability to continue caring for her has hit a wall. I manage for now, but it's possible that there will come a time when the best thing for my mother is that I take a long break from working and be by her side. Without a program like this, there simply isn't a way for me to accomplish that and remain employed. I also want to bring up that I've been putting off knee surgery for a while now. I've been worried that if I use my accruals and FMLA to care for myself, I might not have anything to use so I can care for my mother. This model of leave might be okay for other workers, but it has put me in a serious bind. And I want to be clear, I want to stay with my employer. I love what I do because it's meaningful work. This leave would keep me in the workforce. I can't go without pay for weeks at a time.
Thank you very much, okay. Ms. Thayer.
Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Lee Sullivan, followed by Margaret Sheeta. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. Welcome.
Sure. My name is Lee Sullivan. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I am a revenue tax specialist at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I'm testifying today as a proud member of MAPE in support of House File 2, Pay Family Medical Leave. In 2016 and 17, our union campaigned for paid parental leave, or PPL, policy to allow new parents crucial bonding time after the birth or adoption of a child. During the campaign, I became pregnant and faced my own struggles. I had difficulty giving birth and spent 5 days in the hospital, three of which were spent in labor before finally giving a C-section. When my husband and I returned home, my husband had to go back to work while I stayed home with my son. This was difficult as I was still healing from the C-section, and I also suffered from chronic fatigue and hip problems. I was also the caretaker for my elderly mother who faced many health problems. Since I had used up all of my FMLA hours for the year for the birth of my son, I was not allowed to do it again that year. My son was later diagnosed with autism and needed numerous speech and physical therapy appointments. The PPL benefit that we fought for was a wonderful benefit, but has a lot of areas that we can improve. However, we are required to spend down our sick leave accruals before we can access the benefit, leaving little to no safety net for when we get sick or need to attend medical appointments. It does not cover medical leave, and it runs concurrent with FMLA. So if our families needed extended care like mine did, we hope that it isn't in the same calendar year as when we use PPL.
Please, if you'll just wrap up. Thank you, Ms.
Okay, yeah. We can take honest strides in making Minnesota a state and an employer that values our well-being and make it accessible to all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today. And with that, we have Margaret Sheeta. Thank you. If you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Margaret Sitta. I'm a high school counselor, a member of the West St. Paul Federation of Teachers, and a parent. I'm here to speak in support of House File 2. As you can likely see, I am 37 weeks pregnant. I'm going to give birth in the next week and a half, so this is personal to me. I have lived and am living the experience of being a Minnesotan without paid family and medical leave protections. The lobbying from educational leadership organizations against paid family and medical leave is disappointingly short-sighted and disingenuous. Educators are disproportionately female, and the lack of paid family and medical leave disproportionately harms women, especially women of color. There's a desperate need in education for staff retention, and paid family and medical leave has been demonstrated to increase retention. And at its core, the argument that the greater good is for a teacher to be in the classroom suffering instead of taking the time they need to heal and care for their family members is inhumane. Teachers already schedule their lives around student needs and the school calendar as much as they can. A colleague of mine was recently diagnosed with cancer and expressed disappointment that their doctor didn't want them to wait until June to have an essential surgery. Employers glossing over the effect on the employee to emphasize the effect on their bottom line are being callous at best. Even childbirth, which is often a desired and celebrated life event, is also a physical trauma, and newborn care is all-consuming. This is my third pregnancy. My first baby was stillborn in 2019, and while I had some accrued sick time and was eligible for FMLA, I took only 5 days off, three of which were spent in the hospital, and returned to work the next week. If you've given birth, you might remember the physical experience of being 1 week postpartum. If you've experienced stillbirth, you know I was not physically or emotionally ready to return to work. But because I knew I would run out of accrued time if I was fortunate to have future pregnancies and living babies, I returned to work, suffering. And in retrospect, it was the logical decision. I've been careful with my sick days, but I will run out of time in the 9 weeks I'm planning to take with this baby. And I know we're short on time. I just want to emphasize as a stillbirth parent how critical it is that stillbirth remain in the definition of pregnancy in this bill. The physical and emotional recovery time is as necessary for stillbirth parents as it is for the parents of living babies. I urge your support of this bill.
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing that issue to bear because there are numerous people who suffer silently and it is critical. Thank you so much. You. And I offer you my condolences
there. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Representative Berg, you have a statement or a question you wanted to bring forward?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, it's hard to go after that story and that admission. I think that shows the very necessary humanity that this bill offers, not just women, but families that need to recover from stories like that and many other stories. It takes a lot of courage to be vulnerable in front of people you don't know. I just want to lift that up for our testifier. My comments are that many workers have paid time off, sick time, that they get through collective bargaining, but many employers are circumventing that and forcing workers to use up their vacation, their PTO, and their sick time for events like what we've heard about testified today. And I just want to make it very clear that this bill addresses circumstances like childbirth, like caring for a sick or elderly parent. That's what this bill is for, not for employees to just run around using any type of leave for fun. This is very specific to the needs that come up that we are often unprepared for. And so I want to thank the author for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Berg. We have 5 minutes. Representative Nash, you had a question for Alex Hassel. Is that Alex? Is that correct?
No, Madam Chair. I was just trying to get recognized for wrap up. And are we done with testifiers?
We are done with testifiers. You have Representative Harder on your side who would like to ask a question. So do you want
By all means, I'll just go before we go to a vote.
Well, we have Representative Harder and Representative Nadeau. It's up to you. We'll go to a vote just right before 10 o'clock.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll go to my members first, and then I'll have a very small, brief comment before we're done.
Thank you. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So are we at the comment part then?
Yes, we are.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, so obviously my mantra about Minnesota that we are so progressive that we are actually regressive. I mean, this bill is extremely oppressive. Many businesses already offer generous benefits. And if employees feel that they can do better, they can certainly look elsewhere. The one thing I want to bring up that has been mentioned, a group that is near and dear to my heart, and that is agriculture. So Harders are a part of cooperative. I have reached out to the one that we work with, asking them their thoughts on agriculture, what this bill is going to do to them. They feel that even if it's funded by both the employee and the employer, it's going to create a hardship for both entities. Frequently, when benefits are added, there is a cost, which means that the employee needs to cover part of that. And then the employer would say, oh, look, I am moving backwards. I need to be paid more. So there's a cost there. So being in agriculture, a lot of the business depends upon part-time or seasonal or temporary employees. And this is going to increase their tax liability. And as a patron, when a business does well, they pass those dollars on to members, which will basically affect our bottom line. So vote no, please.
Thank you. Representative Nadeau, did you have a comment that you wanted to make, a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Richardson. In California, they started paid medical family leave at 6 weeks, increased it to 8. In New Jersey, they started at 6, increased to 12. Rhode Island, 4, increased to 5, increasing to 6 in 23. I could go on. I'm not going to. I'm wondering why you started at 12 and 12 for a total of 24. And I appreciate the testifiers. I appreciate the stories. We all have them. We all have those stories. I took care of a mother-in-law with Alzheimer's. We all have those stories. These are important things. But we have to find that balance. You know, this is the body that has to find that balance between providing those benefits and recognizing the fact that half of the population of Minnesota work for small businesses. I'm lucky. I work for Hennepin. I work for big business. But half of the people work for small businesses, and this is going to be a massive impact on those small businesses. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to go on. I know we're out of time. How did you decide to begin at 12 and 12, a 24-week benefit, when every other state started far, far below that?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Nadeau, for the questions. And as you just stated, we know that leave is universal. It's something that all families and all workers are going to face at some time. And as we look at the use of leave currently here in Minnesota, there's a couple of things that we know. We hear from businesses that talk about the fact that they offer more generous benefits. The vast majority of people with access to paid family medical leave are not taking any leave within a year. And those that do take leave tend to take less than that is available to them. But the underlying context of this bill goes back to the comments that Representative Berg said, recognizing the humanity of people who are suffering. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. We are going to go to a vote.
Yeah, Madam Chair, just very briefly. We're a state and local government committee. We've heard from state and local governments, cities, counties, townships, school boards. They are deeply opposed to this. It's going to be incredibly costly. I would ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. I renew my motion to recommend House File 2 to be re-referred to Human Services Finance Committee. Mr. O'Neill, will you please take the roll?
Chair Cleaford.
Aye.
Chair Cleaford, aye. Representative Hewitt, excused. Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Nash, no. Representative Botter.
Aye.
Representative Botter, aye. Representative Berg.
Aye.
Representative Berg, aye. Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, aye. Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Representative Hansen, aye. Representative Harder.
No.
Representative Harder, no. Representative Herr.
Aye.
Representative Herr, aye. Representative Joy.
No.
Representative Joy, no. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Representative Kosnick, no. Representative Nadeau.
No.
Representative Nadeau, no. Representative Newton.
Aye.
Representative Newton, aye. Madam Chair, the ayes being 7, the nays being 5, and 1 excuse.
With 7 ayes, 5 nays, 1 excuse, the motion prevails, and House File 2 is recommended to be re-referred to Human Services Finance Committee. A reminder to the committee, we are scheduled tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. at the Minnesota History Center for our tour. Please plan your own transportation, and we will see you at the Minnesota History Center tomorrow. And with that, members, we are adjourned.